Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Renee. I'm glad you joined me tonight. Lots of news going on this week, and it's all of it is so out there. I almost feel like I'm working for the National Enquirer these days. First of all, I want to make an announcement, though. I've decided that I'm going to change the show to morning time. I will be having the live show now, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. until 8 a.m. I decided to do that because the listening crowd has come down through the summer. And, of course, I understand that. A lot of people work late. A lot of people are right now, you know, school and all that good kind of stuff. And I actually thought to myself, I would rather upbeat the show a little bit, even though I think it's necessary to report all the things that I do report so that we can discuss them and so people can come to some kind of understanding about what's going on in our world and understand the importance of trying to do better in our own little nucleus. But on the same token, I think it would be nice to start out the day knowing that you all have a friend someplace before your workday begins, and I'd like to be that person. Shelley will be good with that as well. Shelley, who joins me most evenings, although she still works full-time, and sometimes she can't get on the show at night because sometimes she's still at work. So she thinks morning hour would be a little bit different and a little bit more fun as well. So starting next Monday, I will be on at 7 a.m., and I hope all of you that are out there listening will join me. I will put announcement on Facebook, and I will make sure that Blog Talk Radio advertises that as well, that the show has been changed to in the mornings. And we'll see how that works. I'm looking forward to it. It makes my night kind of hectic because it takes me time to plan for the show in the evening. If I can't do it in the afternoon, if other things are going on, and of course here lately things have been very hectic. And it's dinner time. And for those of you who don't or haven't heard me say this before, there's 9 of us that live here. And I am the chef. So most evenings I am preparing a fairly big size meal for everyone. I have lots of teenagers who eat a lot. I have a 21-year-old who works really hard all day out in the sunshine who likes to have a good dinner every night. And of course, my husband's pretty spoiled about having a good dinner, although he's eating less these days since everything has happened to him. But he's getting back on his feet and things are tasting better to him. So I'm going to try this for a while, and I'd love feedback if any of you have anything to say about 7 in the morning. I know this is going to put a little bit of a cramp on some of the people that call me from other time zones. For some people, that's going to be 6 a.m., and for some people, it will be later. But I'm going to try it and hope that it's as successful as it has been so far in the evening. So, on that note, though, I wanted to mention something else before I get into the stories that I'm going to talk about, and that is the fact that my son Michael, you know, he had the two artificial vertebrae and a plate put in his cervical spine. And a young woman came to our home today, and she fitted Michael with this piece of equipment that fits around his neck and has a like a little, I don't know, it's like a machine that sits right on his chest. And it's a new piece of equipment, and it helps the bones heal. His insurance approved it, so it's brand new. fresh off the invention circuit, and it's really kind of neat. It doesn't look uncomfortable. I told him he looks like a very modern Mr. T right now. It's kind of a, it sits on his shoulders and comes around his neck, but it doesn't hold his neck tight. And then the machine part sits right on his chest. So very cutting edge, amazing what we're doing in the medical industry. I just wish we could pull it a little bit tighter and have everybody working together a little bit better. But I guess I wish that about everything. So I'm going to start tonight by talking a little bit about this young woman who got kidnapped while her mom and her little brother were killed by the man who kidnapped her, a friend of the family. Now there's all kinds of stories going on out there. I can't even imagine what this is going to end up being about, but I'm going to share the latest story that was in USA Today, and they posted it at about 4 o'clock this afternoon. This young woman was on the Today Show this morning. She had a couple of, kind of emotional moments, but for 16 years old, she held her own. There was some controversy over why there was so much correspondence between her and James DiMaggio, who is the person responsible for the death of her mother and her brother and her kidnapping. And she said he treated her like he was her uncle and that he was supposed to pick her up that night or that afternoon, and he didn't know where he was going. No one has shared with the public what those messages say, at least nothing that I have been able to see yet. But I'm going to read this to you so you all know the story so far. A man who died in a shootout with FBI agents after kidnapping a 16-year-old girl and killing her mother and brother named a member of the victim's family as his insurance beneficiary. A spokesman for the man's family said Monday. James Lee DiMaggio left $112,000 to Hannah Anderson's paternal grandmother, said Andrew Spanswick. He didn't know why, but he believes it was for the benefit of Hannah, the girl he had abducted. Hannah was rescued by the FBI shootout on August 10th. In the Idaho wilderness and returned home to San Diego. DiMaggio, 40, had been like an uncle to the Anderson children and the father's best friend. DiMaggio named Bernice Anderson as the sole beneficiary of his employer-issued life insurance policy in 2011. Substituting her for his sister, Laura Robinson, the lone survivor of his immediate family. DiMaggio lived with Bernice Anderson for about 2 years before buying a house in 2009 in Boulevard, about 65 miles east of San Diego. Authorities found the remains of Christina Anderson, 44, and Ethan Anderson, 8 years old, in the Boulevard house after it was set on fire. DiMaggio's sister called Hannah's father, Brett Anderson, on Friday to tell him about the life insurance payment. They had a long conversation about their mutual loss, trying to make sense of what happened, and neither of them had an explanation. Brett seemed to recognize that Laura was as much a victim in this as everyone else. He wished her the best. A request for comment from Brett Anderson, made through family spokesperson Stacy Hess, was not immediately answered. I wondered about that too. I'm cutting in here, but I wondered why the day all of this went down, the only people that we saw on television were Hannah's grandparents. That I don't know. I mean, I'm a outspoken grandparent. Any of you who follow the things that happened to my grandson know that I was front and center almost all the time. But there was the dad didn't come on to make any statements or anything, and I don't think until the next day. So DiMaggio worked as a telecommunications technician at the Scripps Research Institute in San Diego. That was reported today. Stephen Weisbart, chief economist at the industry-backed Insurance Information Institute, said insurers generally don't challenge a claim unless the beneficiary is suspected of involvement in the death. Investigators have given no indication that DiMaggio had any accomplices. Pretty much as long as you're dead, the insurance company has very little opportunity to deny the claim. Oh, that's short and sweet. Laura Robinson has taken possession of her brother's cat, Princess, from Hannah Anderson. DiMaggio, a cat lover, took Princess while on the run, and the cat was reunited with Hannah after the rescue. So that's the end of this story so far. But now there is they're asking for DNA from Hannah and from see if they can get DNA from DiMaggio, because there's some talk about the fact that they believe it's very possible that DiMaggio could have been Hannah's father. So we'll have to see what's going to happen with this. But so far, it's pretty much a big mess, I would say. And lots of strange circumstances. I'm going to go back to my switchboard and pull in Shelley so she can... Shell, are you there?
Yeah, but I accidentally hit the button. I want you to leave me muted right now because I'm still I haven't walked out of the office yet, but I wanted to hear what was going. So give me about 5 minutes. I'll try to beep in again so you'll see when I'm ready.
Okay.
But right now I'm still trying to finish some stuff here. I just wanted to hear what you were starting on the show on.
All right, perfect. Talk to you in a little bit.
Cool.
So my next story, and this one is also a real bell ringer. A few weeks ago, we talked at length about Ed Snowden, and we talked a lot about the pros and cons about what he did. And then I mentioned when he got when Russia let him stay, and you know, all the circumstances surrounding all of this is kind of like, I don't want to pass judgment on him. It's because it has little or nothing to do with me. I don't care who knows what I'm doing. I laughed with Shelley the other day when we talked about everybody upset about who's listening on your phones. If you're as old as I am, my first phone had a party line. There were like six other families on the same phone. You never knew who was listening to you. But this now has turned into, this is like something out of a novel by, I can't even think of anybody that writes stuff this weird. Bradley Manning, who's the gentleman who was sentenced for leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks, wants to be a woman. So he was sentenced to 35 years in military prison for the biggest breach of classified documents in the nation's history. And on Thursday, he told everybody that he wants to be a female and wants to live as a woman named Chelsea. Manning received the sentence on Wednesday for giving more than 700,000. I can't even imagine 700,000 secret files, videos, and diplomatic cables to WikiLeaks. His lawyers had argued the former Army intelligence analyst suffered a gender identity crisis when he leaked the files while serving in Iraq in 2009 and in 2010. Now, if somebody can please explain to me that whole paragraph, he suffered a gender identity crisis. They're not saying because he leaked it. They're just saying when he leaked the files. As I transition into this next phase of my life, I want everyone to know the real me. I am Chelsea Manning. I am a female. Manning is only 25 years old. He said this in a statement read by anchorwoman Savannah Guthrie this morning on the news on the Today Show. Given the way I feel and have felt since childhood, I want to begin hormone therapy as soon as possible, Manning said. I also request that starting today, you refer to me by my new name and use the feminine pronoun. An Army spokeswoman said that the Army does not provide hormone therapy or sex reassignment surgery. Manning's lawyer said on the TV program he expected his client to get a pardon from the president. Manning was convicted last month on 20 charges, including espionage and theft. He will serve his sentence at the U.S. Disciplinary Barracks at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Coombs, who is Manning's lawyer, said that Manning would be pardoned in 7 years. Now, I don't know how he comes by that information. I haven't read anything that tells me that that's a part of the deal either. Usually when you receive a sentence, you can have appeals and things like that, but I don't know where that information comes from. Coombs said Manning was seeking hormone therapy and not a sex change operation. I'm hoping that Fort Leavenworth will do the right thing and provide that. If Fort Leavenworth does not, then I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that they are forced to do so. An Army spokeswoman said in an emailed statement, the Army does not provide hormone therapy or sex reassignment surgery. Military inmates have access to mental health professionals, including a psychiatrist, psychologist, social workers, and behavioral science specialists, she said. Asked if Manning wanted to be sent to a woman's prison, Coombs said no. I think the ultimate goal is to be comfortable in her skin and to be the person that she's never had an opportunity to be, he said. Coombs said he was not worried about Manning's safety in a military prison, since inmates there were first-time offenders who wanted to complete their sentences and get out. Experts generally view military prisons as safer than civilian prisons, since the inmates are accustomed to hierarchy and discipline. That's interesting. Manning had not wanted his gender identity issues to become public, but they did after his arrest in 2010, Coombs said. Now that it is public, unfortunately, you have to deal with it in a public manner, he said. A psychiatrist, Navy Reserve Captain David Moulton, testified during Manning's trial that he suffered from gender dysphoria, or wanting to be the opposite sex, as well as narcissism and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Defense lawyers had argued that Manning had been increasingly isolated and under intense stress when he leaked the files, and that his superiors had ignored warning signs. They cited erratic behavior, including sending a picture of himself dressed as a woman to a superior and punching another soldier. In a related case involving gender identity issues in prison, a federal judge last year ordered Massachusetts officials to pay for a convicted murderer's sex reassignment operation. The judge ruled the state had violated the inmate's constitutional rights in denying the procedure. My goodness. Well, folks, I don't know. I'm pretty open-minded, and if you listen to the show, you know that I am pretty open-minded. And he has every right, in my opinion, to be whoever he wants to be. Absolutely. However, that we should pay for it is another story entirely. I know young people, really young people, who are suffering from some of those same things, and they were not self-inflicted by being given a position, although if he's 25 now, in 2009 and 2010, he was just a kid. I mean, what was he, 21, 22? So something about this, just like the Hannah story, I have a feeling as the can opens, there's going to be a lot more stuff coming out and a lot more stuff for all of us to know about. I don't know if people are going to appreciate the fact that there will be some consideration for Manning to have this all paid for by his service. I don't know. I mean, for me, this is kind of like, even if I was his mom, I would be like, why would you think that the Navy should pay for this or that anybody else should pay for this? The military, I didn't know the military ever paid for anything like this. Matter of fact, I thought until just recently there was a lot of controversy if you even told anybody you were gay in the military. And now all of a sudden they're going to pay for these kind of surgeries and this kind of procedure to be done on somebody who's already been, really done some serious crimes against the United States of America. Am I missing something here? I don't know. I don't know. But this for me is like, oh my gosh. Are you there yet, Shell? No, I don't think she is. Let me see if she's here.
Can you hear me now?
Are you there, Shell? Yes, I can. I can.
Okay.
So, can you talk now?
Yes.
Okay. So, first of all, the Hannah thing. I mean, there were people here visiting with me today, friends and family, and we talked a little bit about this, and everybody has, a different feeling about what's going on here. Some people think that Hannah and DiMaggio were having, a relationship. And some people think that DiMaggio is Hannah's real father. And,
wow.
I mean, yeah, it's lots of controversy about what's going on there. And I did watch her on the show this morning. She was very controlled. She got teary-eyed a couple times when she talked about her baby brother and her mom. But, I mean, if you look at this from an outsider's point of view and think to yourself, okay, so maybe he is her real father, then why kill her mother? Or,
right.
And if he is her real father, then what kind of a father would kill her baby brother? So then if you go to the fact that he may have been, having a relationship with her and he killed the mother because the mother knew and maybe the brother just was in the wrong place at the wrong time, then at least that, you can at least connect those dots there.
Right.
But they're also wanting to have his DNA done. And then when you find out that he lived with the grandmother for 2 years before he moved into the house that he just burnt down, And that's who he left the life insurance policy to. So it's very, very strange circumstances.
Well, that fact about the life insurance going to the grandmother, just that fact just came out. This is a very, very, it seems like the more this goes, the more convoluted it gets.
Exactly. And like I said, you would have to see this young woman being interviewed. I kind of have mixed emotions about what I witnessed. You know how you always try to put yourself in the place of somebody that you have some empathy and sympathy for. You think, oh, my God, how would I feel? Say she did think she was in love with him. Say they were having a relationship and she thinks she's in love with him.
Right.
Why would it be okay, or why would she forgive the fact that he killed her mother and her little brother? Right there is kind of a, you know, I mean, you get stopped right in your tracks, right?
Right.
Or,
well, see, the whole thing with the parents, and obviously I'm not saying this is justifiable, I'm just saying that it's almost, you could almost connect the dots on it, you know, for him to kill the mother, like you said, because she knew and might have done something, you know, to get him in trouble with the law, but there's no, I mean, what possible motive could there be for the little boy? That's the part of it that's the biggest tragedy of all, and it's the one that makes the least amount of sense.
Exactly. Well, and then, like I said, say that again.
What threat was the little boy?
Well, maybe he knew what was going on, and he was afraid he was going to tell everybody. You know, Mom and Jim were fighting because Mom found out that Jim was messing around with my sister. I mean, he was 8, you know, and 8 years old, you know, they pick up the lingo, and I don't know that they totally understand everything that they're saying, but they understand enough to repeat it, you know. But so then that would mean that that would be awful. I mean, and then you have to wonder why she went ahead and went online on one of the social networks and answered questions from people. Like, you know, that was perfectly normal for her to do. Of course, I can understand why a 16-year-old would do that, because they don't think anybody is paying attention or anybody can check it later. They don't think that far ahead. I don't know. It's like I said, there were people here today, and we talked a little bit about it, and they were like, oh, my God, something's not right. Something's going on someplace.
Really.
You know? Fact that the first day, the grandparents were the only ones that said anything on television. You didn't see the dad, who's supposed to be this guy's best friend, until the next day. And even then, he was kind of aloof, I thought. He's a very big man, and he just stood up there and said, yes, I'm glad my daughter's home. There was no emotion about that I saw. I should say that I witnessed on TV. I didn't see any real emotion or anything about the little boy or the mother. I felt a tension coming from the man is what I felt, which doesn't mean that he wasn't upset.
Because I haven't really been following it, so I have not seen these people. I mean, I know about the story, but I haven't seen any of the interviews and things like that. Did they ever talk about the function or the dysfunction of the relationship between the mother, Hannah, and the brother before all this happened?
No.
I mean, did she get along with it? Oh, so there hasn't been any discussion on that, whether it was a functional or dysfunctional unit, family unit?
Mm-hmm. No. And the really strange part about that, I mean, I watched Matt interview the lawyer yesterday for who's the baseball star that's in A-Rod. I watched him interview him, and he said that if everybody would sign off on the agreements of talking about the truth and saying the truth, he would do it. Matt had a piece of paper that said, here it is, here's just what you're asking for. And this man, I mean, he danced around that piece of paper like an Irish jig and was obviously very excited. But Matt kept pinning him to the wall. And then I watched them interview this young girl today, and there was a lot of respect there, and they held off. They noticeably didn't ask questions that they had talked about previously. Almost like somebody said, you know, don't go there yet. So it made me, I mean, because I've seen them attack just about anybody they wanted to. I mean, they're news people. It's their job to get you to tell them the truth. And, you know, the juicier the scoop.
Maybe they were
very, very laid back with her.
Yeah. And that, to me, is an indication that there's something bigger going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's the way I felt about it. That's exactly the way I felt about it. And of course,
the media is not careful like that.
They just aren't.
You know.
Well, and even when, I mean, I got to know a lot of media in the past 3 or 4 years, and they can be, you know, act like they're your best friend, and then 5 minutes later, you know, they're saying something very negative. So it's, I picked and chose between who I trusted and who I didn't trust. And I look right at him and I say, if this sounds any different than what I've just told you, I will never, ever speak to you again about this or anything else. And they'd say, we know, Renee. And I'd say, okay, because I meant it. And in the beginning, people tried to get me to say all kinds of stuff. They wanted me to really badmouth the boys and do all this stuff, and I wouldn't do it. And it was, you know, it's not because they didn't try. And the older, more experienced reporters could be pretty relentless. And they would actually repeat something I said with a twist on it, and I'd say, that's not what I said. And most of my interviews with them were live, so unless they just cut it out, they had to put in what I said. I don't think anybody cut anything out that I said either that I could remember. But this was interesting this morning, watching them talk about her and the interview, and then all the other stuff that's popped up. And the report I read tonight didn't come out until 4 o'clock this afternoon. So that's when they found out about the insurance policy. And he has a living sister. I don't know if you heard me read that. But he has a living sister, and Jim, the DiMaggio, and she got nothing. Instead, Hannah's grandmother got it. Strange, huh?
Wow, that is really, really, that really is bizarre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wow.
So then the next story that popped up for me today was this young man who got sentenced
Chelsea
to 35 years. Yeah, Bradley Manning, who wants to be a girl. And there is, the lawyer is saying that he fully expects him to be pardoned after 9 years, and he fully expects this branch of the service and our government to pay to help him achieve his goal of becoming a woman. Again, you know, like we've talked about all these things on the show many times. We've talked about how proud we are of Bailey, the 14-year-old girl who stood up for her own rights and got the Gay Straight Alliance. We talked about some of the young kids in Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts who who have gone up and said, you know, I'm this and this is who I am and you can't change it. I can't change it. It is who I am. And we like boast about them. But I can't imagine any of them saying that because, you know, somebody, first of all, he was the first one to do something wrong. Granted, he was awfully young to be in a position where he could get his hands on some of the things he did.
That's right.
But
I don't quite understand
read
how someone who's that unseasoned is given such proprietary information to handle.
I don't either. I mean, that like blew me away. And then when I started reading through this thing today, I was like, good God, 700,000 secret files, Shelley. Videos and diplomatic cables. I mean, that's like, I don't get it either. And then, and he's talking like, you know, aren't you happy for me that I finally know who I am? I'm Chelsea, I'm a female, all this other stuff. And there's a picture of him in a blonde wig with makeup on and everything. And I'm like, I'm all for it. I mean, he can do whatever he wants to do. But why would he, they think that that when he did all this stuff, it pushed him over the edge. So who pushed him to do all this stuff?
You mean
his
the
lawyer
somehow in, his orientation is what pushed him to act like this?
Here's what the lawyer said. His lawyers argued that the former Army intelligence analyst suffered a gender identity crisis when he leaked the files while serving in Iraq.
Jeez.
You know, for me, this is like, say what? I mean, you know, are you serious?
That's bizarre. Well, see,
it's incredibly bizarre.
One of the things I don't understand is why he thinks that it's the government's responsibility to get him his sex change operation. That's what I'm struggling with, because you have people who have all kinds of physical ailments. And I totally, you know, I feel for somebody who has gender dysphoria, because you're basically trapped in a body that does not, doesn't feel right. You know what I'm saying? So I get that, you know, and I feel for these people. But what about all the people that have lost a limb and need reconstructive surgery and they have to pay for it out of pocket, and or if they don't have insurance, they walk around as a cripple for their life? Why wouldn't they be entitled to reconstructive surgery? And, you know, when you think of all the different people that have had accidents or surgeries where their body is now not normal, what's the difference between that or gender dysphoria? It's still something that needs to be fixed. What about people that are born with birth defects where they have a deformity? It's no different. Gender dysphoria actually is a birth defect. Okay?
Right.
So I'm not making light of it. I'm not, you know, I my heart goes out to these people, because basically it's no different than any other physical deformity. That's actually what it is. Okay?
Yeah.
You know,
we're both in agreement about all of that, and we both have tremendous empathy. But to say, I mean, it says right here, defense lawyers had argued that Manning had been increasingly isolated and under intense stress when he leaked the files, and that his superiors had ignored warning signs. They cited erratic behavior, including sending a picture of himself dressed as a woman to a superior and punching another soldier. But so does that mean that you think the guy's going off the deep end, so he's going to give 700,000 or 700,000 reports and different pieces of secret files to a WikiLeaks place where everybody can see it? I don't even see the correlation. I don't even know how they can put the two things together. But the worst part...
People with gender dysphoria, like I said, it's a physical deformity. It doesn't affect their ability to have morals or use proper judgment.
Exactly. Well, and if you see a picture of him, he's kind of a small guy. This is just overwhelming for me to even. And then I've talked about this 100 times too. All these things end up in the same place, to be honest with you. After you realize how what happens when any kind of precedence is set. And at the very end of this, they talked about he was going off the deep end just before he let all this stuff go. But the lawyers are arguing that in a related case involving gender identity issues in prisons, a federal judge last year ordered Massachusetts officials to pay for a convicted murderer's sex reassignment operation. The judge ruled the state had violated the inmate's constitutional rights in denying the procedure. Now, I can't, you know, I mean, I'm pretty good at trying to put myself in somebody else's place and figuring out why somebody would think that that's a true fact or that they did the right thing by doing that. But,
well,
I mean, that doesn't even make sense to me.
Well, it does to me a little bit. Let me say something. You may not agree with it, but the only way I can almost grasp that is that when you're talking about somebody that is chemically unsexed but physically another one, okay? So you have a man trapped in a woman's body or a woman trapped in a man's body, whatever it turns out to be. Now this individual is incarcerated, and they're, especially if it's a man that wants to become a woman, well, they're just surrounded by men, so they feel vulnerable the entire time. If they get the sex change operation, then they're moved to the other prison. So if it's a person that feels like they're a woman and they're in a man's prison, think about how horrible that must be, even more horrible than just being in prison, period. So if they go through the sex change operation, then they get to move to that prison, and maybe that's why they're saying they went against the constitutional rights, because without allowing them to have the surgery, they're actually in the... It would be like taking a woman who was convicted of a crime and sticking her in the prison with a bunch of men, or vice versa. You know, it makes the incarceration even worse than it started out to be. I have read a case, it could even have been this case, where the person was supposed to be going through the sex change, and because they got convicted before the surgery happened, they didn't allow the surgery to take place, and they ended up putting them in the wrong prison. And there was this, the person was traumatized. And it was a man who was trying to become a woman, and he didn't want to be around other men, and he was getting beat up all the time, and it was, you know, so.
Well, let me ask you something, though. Let me ask you something, though. All that sounds traumatic, absolutely. And I do believe that somebody who's under the duress of a problem like this or a challenge like this will certainly make poor choices, okay? All of that is true enough. However, people every day that are under duress from losing their home, from the death of a loved one, or worse yet, a child, or someone who just a divorce in some cases sends some people over the edge. So they commit a horrible crime, take the life of someone else, and they get put in prison. the way I've always looked at this, and it's hard for me to be honest about it because I don't really feel this way in my own heart, but I do understand why we do it this way. Once you commit an act such as premeditated murder, then you give up your rights, Shell. You give up everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because that choice takes all the other choices away from you. So, and I think we know that by the time we're 10. So to make a decision like that, and then, I mean, you trained to go in the service like this, Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
You're very young. You're very young, but obviously very bright. Otherwise, you wouldn't have risen with all these medals. I've seen him in full dress attire, and he's got medals and all these kind of things hanging all over him. So he must have known his business. And,
right.
And even though he was very young and everything, I can't let go of how young he must have been. If he's, like I said, 25 now, he was only, what, 21 in 2009?
Uh-huh.
So he still knew what he was doing, and
right.
when he gave away 700,000 files of pertinent information that the United States of America believed he was trustworthy enough to have, you know, to have anything to do with it, now, because that pushed him over the edge because he always wanted to be a girl because he was a girl trapped in a boy's body. Then all of a sudden, after getting as far as he did in the service, doing all the things he did, has all these medals on him and everything. What's wrong with that picture?
I know. Curiosity, you might have read this in the beginning. I didn't hear the whole thing. Did he, was this like one act of sabotage where he just dumped 700,000 files with me, or is this something he did over a period of a long time where he was doing some files here? And who did he give them to?
He gave it to this what did they call it? He gave it to this what did I just call it? I just told everybody what the name of it was. Now I've already forgotten it. Let me get it back up again. It's WikiLeak. WikiLeak. WikiLeak.
What is WikiLeak? What is that?
Well, apparently it must be something like some of these sites that they have now, like, I don't know, an organization that collects this kind of information. I never heard of it. I thought tonight I'm done with the show, I would see what I found out. Well, I could probably do it right now. I've got it on this page. Let's see what comes up.
In one shot. Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, my God. That's like just nuts.
WikiLeaks is an international online nonprofit organization which publishes secret information, news leaks, and classified media from anonymous sources.
Nice.
And there's a Twitter that says the latest from WikiLeaks. We open governments everywhere. You remember
wow.
the organization called Hush something, remember, that I had everybody look up because there was stuff about somebody we all know on there? Hush Leaks?
Yeah, right.
Remember
right.
that? Same kind of thing. I guess they're all over now. They're all over people that are just waiting to, you know, have the cans of worms delivered to them and they open them.
Wow.
But again, you know, well, that's what Ed Snowden did. I mean, he gave it to a you know, like an Inquirer, a magazine,
right.
a reporter that, you know, gets little or no respect from his, you know, his colleagues.
Right.
And since then, I've seen that mentioned on a lot of these sites, that they are part of the contributors to a lot of these sites that are talking about all the stuff that's out there that you don't know whether it's true or not. But but the point is if they're gonna pay for that. Do you remember one night we talked about the Veterans Administration and the homeless vets and all the different things that happened to all of them? If this really happens, it will be in my head to take everybody that makes that decision and walk them through the VA hospital in Miami. Because I'll tell you something. There are men that have lived there since World War II. There are a lot of people that are living there. I think I told you about the man that I met that was on this special, like, chair apparatus that he ran with his chin because he had no arms or legs, just his head and his torso. That's where he lived. He lives at the VA hospital in Miami. And there's, it's one of the most... The sadness in the air is so heavy, there's times when you walk through where you feel like you can't breathe.
Right. Well, that's the point I was making before. When you're talking about people that have served this country that didn't commit a crime but got injured in service to this country and need reconstructive surgery and can't get it because they don't have the proper insurance coverage, the government doesn't pay for it, so this guy commits a crime, and now he's going to get his sex change. How does that happen?
That's what I'm saying. It's like a travesty.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is a travesty. You know, because... But that's why I prefaced it first with saying it is a birth defect. It is a physical deformity.
Yes.
Because you have
yes.
chemical makeup that doesn't match the physical apparatus, to be delicate, okay? But the bottom line mm-hmm. is, what about the guys that lost limbs or had part of their face shot off or something, and they could benefit from plastic surgery to have a little bit more normalcy about their life, and they don't get anything because they didn't commit a crime and they're not in jail? How does that work?
I don't know. For me, it's like, you know, we've talked about before. Once you set precedents, then the doors are open.
Mm-hmm.
And when the doors are open, you better be ready to help everybody that walks through them. And if
right.
you're not, then things happen. Bad things happen. You know, it's a part of life to know that if you're going to do one thing for one person, you have to be prepared to do that same thing for another person.
Right.
If you pick and choose who's going to get this and who's going to get that. Well, of course, that's what's happening today already, and that's why we're in such dire straits, because nobody cares about fairness anymore. There is
right.
no sense of equality. There is no sense of fairness. If you're a woman, you get one thing. If you're a man, you get another. If you're beautiful, you get one thing. If you're not so beautiful, you get another. If you're thin, you get one thing. If you're fat, you get another. If you're short, you get one thing. If you're tall, you get another. It goes on and on and on.
And in addition, too much up to the judgment call of human beings. Instead of having a set of guidelines that are based on just simple common sense and, kind of moral issues, okay, which are more, which are easier to find than just giving it to someone's judgment, because if that person that you're being judged on that day is in a bad mood, guess what? You're not going to get a fair deal. You're not going to get a fair judgment. It's amazing that these people bring their temperaments into their jobs. You would think that certain types of jobs, they would be trained to set their personal issues on the side, but you see it happen every day, that you'll get a judge or you'll get somebody who is not in a good frame of mind, something happened to them on a personal level, they bring it to work. Meanwhile, they're making decisions that are affecting other human beings and they'll make rash decisions because their personal life is out of sorts, so they're taking control of it by dealing with others. You know, you see this stuff in the news all the time, and it's because there's not set guidelines. Too much is left up to personal interpretation, and depending on what that person's going through that day, they're either they could be too lenient, they could be too strict, you know, and it's and then you get all these travesties of justice. Somebody getting let off that committed a really horrendous crime, or somebody getting 30 years that really did something so minimal, but the judge was in a bad mood. And you've seen both of those constantly.
Yes, absolutely you do. You see both of those things. And of course, we talked about this when we were going through the trial for Michael. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like every day it was something else. I would think to myself, how did you interpret? That's why I loved Maria Schneider so much, because the other attorneys would interpret something in a law book and read it and give their interpretation and show how that was supposed to alter the situation for the trial they were in. And she would stand up and she would say, if you read that whole page instead of just that paragraph, you'll see how they worked it out so that this is not suitable for what we're talking about. I mean, she probably did that a dozen times. And but a judge can't do that, you know. I mean, a judge can say, okay, we have to hold off now because now I've got to research this because I don't know what you're talking about, and hopefully he can read and understand what he's reading. But if he can't, then, you know, and I'm not saying that judges can't. I'm just saying that sometimes the circumstances are unavoidable, that something like that happens and the remedy is not realized because, you know, either rushed or wrong information or both or all of the above, you know. But for me, just saying that out loud, when I read that, I was like, you must be kidding me. You're actually saying that this young man at 21 years old, who's wearing all these medals and who achieved greatness, obviously, in the field that he chose when he went into the service, and he went into the service. He always felt like he was a woman, but he chose this to do. Okay, that's number one. Now, and then, as you read the story, they find out that the day that he turned over all this stuff and became a Benedict Arnold, if you will, that was the day that he decided that he really wanted to be a girl, and he was tired of hiding it. So it sounds to me like he had some kind of a breakdown, and that's too bad. That's sad. And, of course, that's the chance you take. And one of the things that they're trying to say is that there were warning signs that this young man was crumbling, and nobody paid attention to them, and they should have. So part of it is his superior's fault. I will go along with that.
Yeah,
but I don't believe that the stress and the wear and tear of him turning over all this information turned him into a girl. I mean, what are we watching here? A cartoon on Saturday morning? That doesn't happen this way.
I think what they're saying is that the stress of him snapping and realizing he couldn't live the way he did anymore made him do something foolish. But what kind of sense does that make? So now you come to terms with the fact that you have this gender issue, and that makes you want to commit an act of treason. I'm not sure I'm connecting the dots. What does one have to do with the other? You know,
because it doesn't connect.
It has nothing to do with morality.
No.
You know, if you're trapped in the wrong body, that's sad. There's a lot of things you can associate to that. But why would that make you criminal? Why would that make you want to do? Especially if you're a man wanting to become a woman, you're going to commit a criminal act that can land you in jail while you're still the wrong.
And then while you're in jail, you're going to tell everybody that they got to pay for this now because it's their fault.
Wow. Now, there's something not right.
We're out
of time, though, but babe. But I do agree with that if he sent a picture like that to one of his superiors, shame on them for not getting him to
somebody should
right away and figure out what's going on with the guy.
Yes, absolutely.
Normal.
Somebody should have been paying attention, especially somebody who knew exactly what he was governing in his part of that world. Somebody should have been watching. But
what kind of files were they, by the way? What kind of information?
I don't. It doesn't tell you, but it was. I mean, you know, he's the one that got in so much trouble before, and he got 35 years in prison. So it must have been pretty important stuff. But we got to go. So from my heart to yours, everybody, this is Renee. Good night and God bless. And Shelley will not be with us tomorrow night. She is going on another one of her jaunts. And tomorrow night will be the last time that we will have an evening show. Starting next Monday, the shows will be at 7 a.m. in the morning. So I hope you're all going to join us. And I hope that works out to be a better time for everybody. I'm looking forward to it. So good night, everybody, and Shell, have a wonderful time. I will see you next week sometime.
Yes, you will, and I'll be speaking to you bright and early Monday.
Okay, wonderful. Take care, baby. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.